And you can see that the existing language in that section is what you can see right now in subsection 2. It's the stuff that's not underlined. Current language just says every city and town may enact ordinances, rules, and regulations for the management and conduct of the waterworks system owned or controlled by it. Well, since we're going to add a lot to how cities deal with rules and regulations, it seemed like this was the place to go ahead and talk about those rules and regulations. So the first thing in subsection 1 that I'm proposing, or that I've kind of drafted for us to discuss, is to have two definitions. First of all, to define what a retail customer is, which is an end user who receives culinary water directly from a municipality's waterworks system and is billed by the municipality for water service. So that's and some of these definitions are rooted in other sections of the code. Paul, I think, recognized that. This is generally rooted in, is it drinking water?
19.4, the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Yeah, and the Safe Drinking Water Act. And so I didn't want to, where it made sense to use other definitions more or less, I did that. Although there is the addition of the fact that it's billed, that the municipality is the one doing the billing for the water service. And then waterworks system also is mostly inspired by some other sections of state code. But I wanted to make clear that in order to be consistent with the constitutional proposal, that we're separating out the water rights from the physical system. So the waterworks system, as is in this draft, means a municipally owned collection, treatment, storage, and distribution facilities for culinary or irrigation water, including pipes, hydrants, and appurtenances, but does not include water rights or sources of water supply, such as wells, springs, streams, or shares in a mutual irrigation company. So just starting there, from the definitions, does anybody have any questions about why the definitions say what they are, or if they think there's a concern about that?
I think those are very good. I like it.
Okay. All right, thanks, Paulina. So moving on to subparagraph 3, we start to get into how we implement the proposed constitutional creation of a designated water service area. So a municipality that provides water service to a retail customer outside of its political boundaries shall A, post on its website a map or maps showing its designated water service area and any other areas outside of its political boundaries where retail customers receive water service from the municipality's waterworks system. This is kind of inspired by Representative Coleman's bill from last year to deal with getting people so that they know, you know, who serves them and where they're at. B.
We got some questions.
Oh, yeah.
Comment I got here is you're lumping all municipalities together. Our county has a total of 12,000 people in the county. We have towns with 100 incorporated towns with 1 to 200 people. They do not even have websites. They don't have the manpower to maintain websites. And yet they serve one or two connections outside the municipal boundaries. I just don't think this needs to be all-encompassing here to hit everybody like that. They'll say, Herman has a connection, he's outside the town. I count two in one town and two in another. I think there needs to be some kind of de minimis level where some of this doesn't apply. They just don't have the manpower to deal with all this. I can see the reasonably sized communities that they can handle that. These regulations like this come down pretty hard on small towns.
I have a question. On a lot of the small towns, do they actually have water systems?
Oh, yes.
Okay, they have water systems, but they don't have websites.
They do not have websites.
Do they post? They have to post to the public notice website, though. I suppose what we could do is tell them they could post the map on the public notice website if they don't have one. That was so big.
They don't have really the manpower to keep up or the number of connections outside the city.
You shouldn't have a water system without a map.
Well, they do, but it's probably for the ones in the town, but they may have a connection that starts in town, but then another guy runs a couple miles.
Excuse me?
Yes.
We'll restate the question, Representative. I know it's hard to probably hear.
Yeah, unfortunately, the air conditioner came on.
Are the committee members not sitting around the table?
Well, there's a question from around the edge of the room about how to deal with a very small city that doesn't really maintain a website. And that this is creating an expectation or a burden on that particular city to maybe have to create a website where it didn't have one before. And should there be some kind of an exemption for a certain sized city that doesn't have a website?
Well, more than that, I mean, do we think it's necessary to have them on city websites? I mean, that was part of the bill. But we did learn that was a burden on a lot of cities, or at least a few cities.
Yeah, I was just going to ask as well, Representative, I agree with you. Maybe every large or small water system or municipality has to do certain postings. So maintain a map. I don't know if we have to say website in here, or maybe have a qualifier.
Do the public notice website because everybody's required to report.
Maybe it's an approved public notice and maybe that.
So that also have the distinction be that a city should put on this website, have at least ensure a population of 1,000, and towns would have the option to post it on the website or public notice website.
Or say that the map's available at the city hall.
There actually are exceptions for towns for different noticing requirements. So every city of the fifth class and bigger does have to post everything on the transparency website, on Pokemon's website, elsewhere. But through the years, we have put in exceptions for the very reasons
the towns.
The legislature in recent years has tried to scale back those exceptions, but there has been a precedent in other realms of treating towns differently than cities. Now, not all towns are created equal. Alta is a town, but it's in the city of the first class, and it's in a large area. So the other way we could try to distinguish this is you could say towns within counties of the third class are smaller, the fourth class are smaller.
Or how about this? In the Safe Drinking Water Act, there's actually we define a retail water system as a public water system with 500 connections. You have to have at least 500 connections. And you could tie it back into that definition. I don't know how we do it, but that's a suggestion that you could do, because I remember when we went into that act, we had the same issue of ice, and we sort of chose the 500 connection number because we figured if you had that many connections, you were probably big enough and sophisticated enough you could meet these requirements. It's just an idea. I throw it out.
So, Representative, when you suggested that maybe this wasn't necessary on the city website, where were you headed with that?
Well, I can't. I couldn't hear the conversation that just happened. So, I think it needs to be open, transparent, easily accessible, easily findable.
I think Paul's solution under the Safe Drinking Water Act actually takes care of that, because we're all bound by that. This is dealing with water.
So, Representative, there are, for purposes of the Safe Drinking Water, there are other times that we use a definition based on 500 connections or more. One idea would be to say that it's got to go on your website if you're a system with a minimum of 500 connections. And we could still require the city smaller than that to maintain the maps, but it wouldn't necessarily be on a website.
Is there an appropriate state website that they would all be accessible through?
Yes, the solution is we can put down on your own website or the public notice website.
Does the public notice website support maps? No. I mean, I don't think, I don't know if it does.
It's more meeting oriented. Yes.
They'll scan it.
Yeah, but yeah. But there, if I recall the public notice website, it's kind of...
It's just public.
It's organized around the event of a meeting.
Yeah.
No. In our Metro Township, everything we get, all the attachments in our packet, are actually posted on the public notice
That's
website.
That's true. The website's organized around the meeting. So the question would be, what is the hook on the public notice website? So when I look up the Paul Water System, and the Paul Water System brings up the map, maybe
the
Paul Water System would have meetings.
Isn't there a difference between the transparency website and the public notice?
Transparency websites for finances.
That's true. Something we could look at.
Yeah.
At the... maybe the easy solution is we could put it on our website if you want to do it that way. If you could make it the city's website or the state engineer, and we could create a section for
it. I'm sure
put them on.
We can reference it. That would allow the smaller entities that don't want to create a website. But I know the legislature's been pushing all the government entities to get these websites in place.
Yep.
So
I think following on the representative, your comments, you know, making sure that it's available, I think we'll work, find a way that's administratively easy for the smaller cities and towns. And I like Paul mentioned under 19.8, the Safe Drinking Water, it has the definitions, and maybe Division Drinking Water might have a site, but we can figure that out and meet both your needs.
It's the same definition for you.
Okay.
So I guess I would anticipate that saying if you have 500 or more, it'll be on your website, but everybody, regardless of size, will submit them to submit the map right now to the state engineer unless we decide somewhere else. But that way, if you're over 500 connections, you'd have two responsibilities, one on your own website and then send it to the state. Everybody, however, regardless of size, would still send it to the state. Okay.
I like that direction.
All right. So then the next thing the municipality that serves retail customers outside of its boundaries needs to do under 3B is to define by ordinance the areas included in its designated water service area. Under sub, you have a question, Greg?
Well, on that, I was just going to say, if they don't have the specific ordinance on it, maybe the default to the city boundaries.
So the one thing I want to say about this. Well, I guess Greg's point is if you serve somebody outside of your city boundary and you haven't adopted an ordinance, that the expectation is your water service area is limited to your city boundary. I mean, we want to encourage people to adopt an ordinance, but I guess there is that question of what happens
if you haven't adopted an
ordinance. If you have retail service outside your boundary, under the Constitution, you need to take it. That's the constitutional hook that we're using to avoid the constitutional ambiguity we've had all this time.
Wasn't it my understanding that you could have a designated service area that was outside the city, but you could also serve people outside that business?
Yes.
But that's what we're working on.
But the city has to at least go through the exercise of doing it.
Well, you could adopt a designated service area, but they do have the possibility of contracting outside this, that.
Yes. No, this, it's not by contract. They're actually retailing.
No, we talked about... the city can still contract to provide retail service outside its boundary, but it has to have a contract. Or they have to have a designated service area, but they have to have one or the other. And so what you're saying, Greg, is yes, a city could say, our designated service area is our political boundaries, and anything we provide outside is going to be by contract. What we want is a public process. So the city has to at least go through that process, and the public can have input.
But I guess the question is really, what's the consequence, or what does it mean? Maybe there's no consequence, but what does it mean if a city hasn't adopted an ordinance designating its service area?
My view is the Constitution will allow that.
So
they face that risk to somebody to challenge it.
So do we need to say something about what happens if you haven't adopted it, or you know.
Do you want to put a default in the statute that says if they don't do something by a certain time, it will be deemed just a municipal boundary?
Well, Article 3, as Mark wrote it, just the first sentence right out the bat, a municipality that provides water service to retail customers outside its political... That's what I interpreted what you're saying.
I agree, and I think that's... Yeah, if you don't designate it as a designated service area, you better have a contract.
But as I understand from Representative Coleman and others, that if you're serving people outside your boundary, they have a right to know under what conditions their water is being provided, et cetera. Yeah, Paulina?
I think the big hook here is that if the municipality owns that infrastructure outside that boundary, you are a retail service provider. You cannot just contract. You own that system. You're flowing water to it, to that meter. You're not contracting. A contract is you're selling water to another entity or another group that has its own infrastructure. That's a totally different animal. So to say you have no responsibility on a map of your service infrastructure, if you're doing a plan for improvements, say a five-year capital improvement plan, you've got to be able to show the pipelines, and that's your service area, whether inside or outside.
But Paulina, you're not saying, say for instance, I think a large number of municipalities might have a source that could be miles away from the corporate limits. And so what I was understanding is through yourself and Representative Coleman and others, we were just looking to define if service is available and if it's on this retail basis, or it could be this type of contract basis, either way that the individuals know under what certainty they are provided water. But I don't think we want to compel a city to, if they have a pipe that runs 5 miles outside.
We have a pipe that goes miles out of our service area, but we have a map that says this is our infrastructure map, and this is included in it.
But just because it's your infrastructure, that city, or in your case it's a district, that city could decide, yes, we will treat you as a retail customer, or no, we'll treat you as a water contract.
But, well, so this is an ongoing discussion from prior meetings. We took a vote, and I don't remember which meeting it was. It was last meeting or two meetings ago, where we recognized that not all retail customers would necessarily be in the designated water service area, and that the city would determine where the boundaries of the designated water service area are.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand the conflict there, but this is based on that direction that we voted on.
It's in recognition that sometimes a city may be providing some retail service to some customers along the pipeline with the intention that those customers will be handed off to some other entity coming in, probably a district or another city that may be moving into that area, but in the meantime, they're providing the water service.
I mean, it is interesting. If we're going to require people to prepare a map, then they're going to have to think about what's their designated water service area in order to prepare the map.
That's the whole purpose of the statute. Yeah.
So it seems like if you're going to prepare the map, you ought to be able to figure out how to do an ordinance to meet that.
A couple things. One is, and I apologize for coming in late. I was doing a couple other things on this, actually on this topic. But my thinking is, this goes to the definition of the waterworks system, and it also goes to 3A, which is what I think we're still talking about, hopefully.
Yes, the
3B.
The idea that there is the designated service area, okay, those retail connections within that service area, then there are retail connections outside the designated service area, and then you have surplus contract holders far outside of both the political boundaries and the designated service area. So you have sort of have three columns. Am I reading this correctly?
Well, I would just generally think that whether you're an outside of system, outside of the water area retail customer, or whether you're an outside of area surplus contract or wholesale contract, I think there's just really two. I think there's your designated service area, and then there's outside of your designated service area.
I think it's by contract. Can I jive with reality, though?
No, but the reality is, the way I visualize it, Scott, is you have your designated service area, then you have contract service. Whether you call it retail, whether you call it wholesale, whether you call it however you spin that water cell,
you know,
but this contract.
But if you're providing water to a retail customer through your, quote, waterworks system, and I want to talk about the waterworks system definition, too. If you're providing water to a retail customer through your city pipes, aren't they in your designated service area?
No.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. That would be up to the city to decide.
Okay. I mean,
that's what you argued for, Scott.
No, Paul, I didn't. You're misunderstanding.
So the representative question, the question was, if you're serving somebody as a retail customer through your pipe, so they automatically in the designated water service area, and the answer is not necessarily. It depends on what the city establishes as the area.
I want to make sure that sort of third hybrid column, those folks are very different than, say, folks that are using a surplus water permit up Canyon.
That aren't part of the retail.
That are not part of the retail, that are not hooked into a city distribution system. So that's why I'm saying you now have three categories of water user. And I just want to make sure that that's how we want to go forward.
That's how the city wants to define it.
I'm all for the city being able to define it, how the city, you know, wants to do so by ordinance, no problem. That's all good. I just want to make sure that there's an understanding that you now have retail connections from the city that are not within the designated service area.
Right, and to that extent, you are correct, Scott, there are three different defined kinds of areas. You have inside your service area retail customers, outside your service retail customers, and wholesale or other contracts.
No, but what you're saying in here is you're actually not talking in terms of inside, outside. You're now talking service area.
Correct.
You're adding a section for service area, which steps beyond the concept of inside, out.
Well, when I said inside, out, I mean inside service area, outside service area.
I like how you handled it and addressed it, and if we could go through and finish.
Yeah.
Sure. The other question I have is the waterworks system that you have defined, and this sort of goes, this is a corollary point. It talks about, speaks in terms of collection, treatment, storage. Do we want those to be part of this section? Because those to me are sort of different from the retail delivery system, distribution system that a municipality employs. Some cities don't have any of those.
I think the reason he put it there is because of we had to put a statutory restriction because we were taking it out of the Constitution. And this is the section where we put it in.
So when we get to subsection 6, and maybe, I don't know, let's talk about it when we get to subsection 6.
Okay.
Because that's why it's in this particular part of it.
That's
fair. Okay, So adopt by ordinance those areas included in this designated water service area. I think we need to expect that people will adopt ordinances. I think I would prefer to just leave it silent about what happens if you haven't adopted an ordinance.
I agree.
But we expect that people need to adopt an ordinance. Subsection C, then, that the municipality needs to adopt by ordinance the municipality's policies applicable to its designated water service area and to retail customers located outside of its designated water service area. And D, adopt by ordinance reasonable water rates for retail customers in its designated water service area as provided in section 10-8-22.
I think we just need to insert on C.
Do they always have to do that by ordinance? I know I was working with the community and I didn't see anything to prevent it. That would, when they changed the rates, they would do it by resolution. They had an ordinance that authorized that.
So the question, Representative, is whether a resolution would be sufficient instead of an ordinance to set rates. From my perspective, I'm used to seeing them done by ordinance. The biggest thing is that there's public notice and public opportunity for input.
They're always giving public notice.
Yeah, so resolutions, as long as it's done by legislative act, I don't know that I mind.
I leave that to the...
Let's say we now have these really tiny communities like metro townships that have less than, or maybe have 250 homes, and area is really small. Even they have to, by ordinance, adopt a fee schedule. Fee schedules under the law require an ordinance. And if little cities don't have that, maybe the League of Cities and Towns can do a template And it's so easy. Put it on the agenda, have a template, fill in the blanks, and it's done. We're in the process of doing a fee schedule right now, but it has to be adopted by ordinance.
Yeah, I think it's in the league can educate the people, because they shouldn't be adopting it by resolution.
Because we're talking
under
municipalities.
Title 10. Districts do it by resolution.
Districts do resolutions, and cities have to do ordinance. They're the only, municipalities and governmental entities are the only ones that do ordinance. Districts don't have the power of ordinance. So that's why we use resolutions.
I guess the question, Greg, is would it be a problem to expect them to shift from, if they've been doing resolutions, whether that was appropriate or not, is it a problem to expect them?
They had an ordinance that defined their original rate schedule, but the ability to alter the rate schedule.
Yeah, well, they could. I think we're looking for the public process. That's why we put the ordinance, because we thought that generated more public involvement. You have to have a public.
Well, I can tell you it doesn't.
Well, I know. We live in hope.
Representative, you took a deep breath there. Did you have something you wanted to add?
No.
Well, I can't hear all of this super well, but I'm stuck on a possible E that I'd like to add.
Okay.
So what was your thought about an E?
My thought about the E is looking at the court cases and the standard for disparate rates is
that's the next thing.
A reasonable standard, which is very, well, I guess it can be subjective or objective according to what litigation might say, but would it be possible to say something along the lines of when a city does charge a higher rate to certain retail customers that rate be justified according to a direct cost of service?
So let's, but I was hoping.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in the next section on water rates.
Yeah, sorry if I cut into your comment there. What I was hoping to do was include everything with that really talked about defining rates in the next section, 10-8-22. We did want to refer to the rates in this section just to help people find that, but to try and include all of the rules regarding rates in that next section.
I think, Representative, I think Mark's covered what you're looking for. We'll make sure
we
tease that
that's
out.
That's the next section.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Mark, just real quick before you leave, C, the word policies is maybe something we may want to think about, because for us that's kind of a word that people have certain expectations, and
We adopt rules and regulations. We don't call them
perhaps
policies.
Rules or standards.
Policies has a much broader interpretation.
I know in the water community, I think we use rules and regulations as opposed to the policy and procedure manual.
Yeah. So what are we comfortable with? Rules?
Rusty, what would you call them? I think what we're talking is some formally adopted
rules,
policy, or guideline.
Well, it says ordinance, adopt by ordinance, the municipalities.
Adopt by ordinance, municipalities. I would call it rules and regulations. Applicable to is designated. That's the term of art I've always seen.
I think that may be a little better.
Rules and regulations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's the one you send out every January to all your customers.
So rules and regulations is consistent with subsection 2, which is the existing language. So we would, think that probably makes sense.
Okay. Yep. Good.
Good catch.
Okay. So subsection 4, so now we're talking about what happens inside of a designated water service area. And this is really, I think, the heart of a lot of what the concern was, is how do we make sure that people inside a designated water service area are treated the right way. So within its designated water service area, municipality shall, A, provide service to all retail customers in an equitable manner, including the initiation and termination of water service, and B, equitably apply restrictions on water use to all retail customers in times of anticipated or actual water shortages. those were the two, I think, big picture items was how do we make sure that people get access to water and don't get just randomly terminated, and if for some reason there's a shortage, how do we make sure that people inside the city aren't treated better necessarily than people outside the city. So any questions about...
Yeah, so Mark, you being the attorney on this, right? One of them.
Yeah. One of them, yeah.
Equitable is has a particular meaning that just means sort of fair and impartial. I wonder if that's good enough. That some users could have their water terminated that are outside of the boundaries. I wonder if it should be more than just fair. But maybe if we should have a prohibition.
Well, let's have it. Scott, you talked about equitable.
Paulina, do you want to go first, Paulina?
Representative Coleman, I think that in this context, as it's written here, the word equitable means in an equal manner. And that is fair. Fairness in the law is an abstract. It's not something that you can count on and that's tangible. If Paul were to go to court and said this isn't fair, the judge would say, well...
Well, he'd agree with me, of course.
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah.
Okay, well, what next? But I think the word... I think the way this is written, it's equitable, meaning equal for all. And those of us that have suffered through this kind of disparity, I think this is a good statement.
Equitable is a term of art.
Well, and that's what I think I want to stress. Equitable is not the same as equal. And I know I'm not an attorney, but I do understand that equitable is not the same as equal. So let's not misunderstand that. Let's not misunderstand that. If we use the word equitable, that means you'll be treated equally.
No.
Because that is not what that word means. It means you should be treated fairly. But that doesn't mean you'll have equal treatment, and I'm not sure that equitable goes far enough. Maybe we want equal treatment, that if you're going to terminate water, those considerations would be equal to the considerations of people within your city.
Change the word to equal.
Well, so we have two other comments, and I have a comment. So Scott Martin's got a comment.
Representative,
here.
I think you're onto something there, and I think there needs to be a little more meat on the equitable bone. And I've lived through 20 years of litigation in a lot of this stuff, and when you get a judge sitting in a black robe and someone says you have to be equitable, all that does is raise an issue of fact, and then we're off to the races through fact discovery, and you can't get the case done on summary judgment, and it gets to be a long and drawn out mess. What my suggestion would be along the lines of what you suggest, and track it with the equal protection constitutional provisions that are very well fleshed out, both in state and federal law. That way, you're not in some sort of amorphous space. What you have is clear requirements commanded under equal protection case law.
Do you have a language?
Yeah.
So the language that I would suggest...
Now, who is this speaking?
Scott Martin.
Who is this?
Scott Martin.
Okay. So this, I think, would go a long, long way to provide me comfort with what I would hope to help resolve.
Great.
And I think that's what we've been trying to get at.
Right. Let me. I just have.
Yeah, and I think
and again, this
equal
is why
protection
I was
comes in.
The language that I would suggest would be.
Here it is. Go ahead, Scott.
The language that I would suggest is 4 would read: within its designated water service area, a municipality shall provide service to all retail customers, including the initiation and termination of water service consistent with the principles of equal protection, and B, apply restrictions on water use to all retail customers in times of anticipated or actual water shortages, consistent with the principles of equal protection. There is equal protection is probably one of the best constitutional concepts fleshed out in case law, and it's very adeptly applied by state law, state judges and federal judges alike. So that's the
I like it.
And I think that's where the citizen or the end user is going to find their protection is in an equal protection clause on this. What I wonder is if we violate then or infringe upon a municipality's right to secure water for its inhabitants first. And I think that kind of refers back to the constitutional provision that that understanding that the municipality has a responsibility primarily to its inhabitants. So do we create a conflict by doing this? And I think that is the inherent conflict. Is a city should be able to provide for its own, but in extending its service area, needs to provide an equal protection for those people as well. Do we create a conflict?
I don't think so, Representative, because of the way the Constitution is changing. So right now, the Constitution, a municipality's obligation runs to its inhabitants, and we're actually removing, or at least the proposal from the Constitutional Committee, is to substitute the word inhabitants to the individuals that are within the designated water service area, and so I don't think we're creating a conflict between those two. Where what we're saying is when you create a designated water service area, you're gonna do almost exactly. I mean. Basically the same thing, regardless of whether that person's inside or outside your city boundary.
Yeah. This is why this legislation needs to be passed in conjunction with the constitutional amendment. And they live and die together.
Okay. Well, I don't know that. I don't know that we should assume that. But regardless of what the Constitution says, that incorporated municipality has a fiduciary duty of care and loyalty to its inhabitants with or without a change in that constitution. They have a fiduciary duty of care and loyalty to their citizens. And so do we create a new conflict?
And that's what we're trying to solve here.
In terms of water service, the expectation is that once the city designates its designated water service area, that if you're in that area, you're going to be treated essentially, you know, I don't know if I want to say the same, but you're going to have the same rules and regulations applicable to you regardless of where you're at.
And Mark, it goes the other way too, right? In Ogden City, for example, if Ogden only provides water to 50% of your city, and that's your designated water service area, the other 50% of the city may be users of another water system. So, again, changing inhabitants to those within the service area, you have that perceived conflict. It's really not a conflict because you're only providing the service to those within the
service
area.
Right. It solves that issue as well.
Yeah.
That's why it's a good change.
Scott, I was typing as fast as I could while you were talking. Do you mind just
I'm sure
you
can.
Sure. You know, within its designated water service area, a municipality shall A, provide service to all retail customers, now strike, in an
right.
equitable manner, and including the initiation and termination of water service, insert, consistent with the principles of equal protection, and go to B, strike equitably, apply restrictions on water use to all retail customers in times of anticipated or actual water shortages, insert, consistent with the principles of equal protection again.
So are you not removing, I couldn't hear that all that well, are you not, did we leave equitably
no.
in there?
No,
we ditched equitably.
We're taking equitably out and replacing, or the proposal is to remove the word equitably in both locations and replace it, not exactly in the same spot, with consistent with the principles of equal protection.
Mark, you got a question?
Okay.
Yeah.
I think on Barbara Cameron, Big Cottonwood, Scott's amendments here make a big difference to us. We've always been told that we're surplus water and our water would be taken away the very first if there were an environmental need. So can you still assure me that surplus water contracts are called retail? Are they still considered retail?
Have they ever been?
No.
No, they're just going to be by contract.
Are we going to be terminated if there's a water shortage?
Frankly, that's above my pay grade.
That will turn on the contract. The council will end up deciding.
So I do want to emphasize. Yeah. So the discussion we're having is this rule of equal protection applies specifically inside of the designated water service area. So if you're inside the designated water service area, it applies. If you're outside the designated water service area, it may or may not apply, but it's not based on this statute. It's going to be based on your contract that you've got and anything else that might come into play. But it's not based on this statute.
It doesn't sound too equal for the surplus water company.
That will depend on your contract.
We're doing away with the surplus.
No.
But we're doing away with, in the retail service area, there's equity.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
This is a first step.
And there is a major difference between, as you were saying, Mary, the retail
right.
in the service area.
That's why contracts
and those who have contracts. Because your contract...
We have contracts.
Yeah, and I've never read your contract, but you could have a contract that actually says you get first dibs at water before anybody in the service area. I mean, I'm not saying that's in your contract. I'm saying that when you're negotiating the contract, you're negotiating contractual terms that are separate from what's in the retail area statute. So they are different.
I believe our contract doesn't say anything about termination.
That's why you really want this to go through.
Yeah. Say, Fred.
Fred?
My question is, this is critical enough. Are you going to have a vote on each amendment and then vote on... the amended bill? I think if you did that, you might preserve your record a little bit.
This is the first real substantive amendment we made.
Oh, you had another one out there when you switched out policies for rules.
Oh, that.
Yeah, Representative, did you hear the question? Did you hear the...
I didn't hear the question.
Okay, the question from Fred Finlinson, and I've been wondering this myself as we've gone down through here, is as we've talked about several of these items, there have been sometimes some small changes, sometimes more substantial amendments to what we're talking about that have seemed to be just by acclamation. And the question is whether we should be taking votes on each of these changes as we go so we preserve a record of where we're at.
Well, I would move up to this point that we accept the changes that have been recommended.
Okay, so there are three changes that have been recommended so far. The first was on the website map, that the it only applied to systems with 500 customers or greater, but that everybody submit a map to the state engineer.
500 connections,
yeah. The second one was to change the word policies to rules and regulations in subsection 3C. And then the third one that we've discussed so far has to do with substituting the words consistent with the principles of equal protection, basically for equity or equitable manner. So that's your motion.
That's the motion. Yeah. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. How about Representative Coleman and Representative Ed?
Aye.
Second? Just a second. Apparently I violated the rules of procedure here. Cameron?
Just a quick point of clarification. If we vote yes, it's with the understanding that, in our case, we vetted this language with a bunch of cities on Friday and on Monday. And so I'm willing to vote yes, but with the understanding that we need to go back and just confirm with those entities that gave me marching orders that they were comfortable with the language we came in with.
Okay. Did you hear that, Representative Coleman?
Tell her who was.
No, that's
it. Lee.
Okay, that was.
Cameron has to be consistent.
Yes, so that was Cameron expressing that the league has been discussing this with their members, and so his vote, he's struggling to take a different position than they've already talked about, but he's willing to vote recognizing that he may not have their support when he goes back.
I would like to amend my motion.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that is that we support these changes, but that we need a consensus of other parties, such as the mayors in these three cities on the East Bench, and individuals that the league has been working with, that contingent upon their concurrence.
I suggest that you hold that kind
of. Well, this isn't binding.
Yeah, no.
This doesn't bind anybody. This is in support of a draft proposal.
Yes.
It's a draft.
Okay, forget
it. My suggestion is very simple. If you have amendments, you decide whether they're in or out, and then when you get to the end of it, you have a vote on the amendment thing, and that way everybody can put in their caveats then, and you can preserve your record that way. But we need to know that.
What's in and what's out?
One motion, and it was seconded over here. You took a vote, and it was whatever it was.
Okay. So I think we're back to the original
motion. Yeah.
Motion.
This still is a draft. This is a working document.
Yes.
This won't be a finished product yet.
But I think as Representative Coleman and our legislature takes this, knowing that the group here at least reviewed that topic and they can give them that information to move forward as they deliberate on any other changes that they might consider or to take the document as presented and understand why it was presented as such.
So you passed that, those amendments? Did you pass it?
So, yeah. So no one wants to change their vote here.
That's just for the amendments.
Anyone on the phone want to change their vote?
I think you do have to ask, is there anybody opposed?
Is there anyone opposed?
Okay.
So that's unanimous to hear. Okay, thank you.
All right. Section 5.
Now we're on the straight and narrow, hopefully. So, number 5. Nothing in this section, A, precludes the municipality from enacting service or other restrictions affecting localized areas or the entire area of its designated water service area based on operations, maintenance, or emergency situations. I think the idea here is we just don't want to create the idea that by using these principles of equal protection, that depending upon what's going on in the system, that you might not have access to water for a little while because of something happening specific to your area. So we're going to treat everybody the right way, but we still have to operate a system.
You have to do this for operational
reality. Or if part of the system is damaged, but not the entire system, you're going to have to potentially affect people a specific way. Or B, nothing in this section expands or diminishes the ability of a municipality to enter into a contract to supply water outside of the municipality's designated water service area. And again, that would be whether it's wholesale service, whether it's an outside retail customer, or whether it's a surplus supply. But your ability to continue to serve people outside the city or outside the designated water service area.
That allows for conjunctive water management, too.
That's true.
Yes. Scott?
My only suggestion on 5A, Mark, is after maintenance, insert health, safety, general welfare.
Yeah.
And the reason is those are sort of general police powers associated with most municipal, I guess all municipalities.
I hope so.
So I'd hate for us to, by statute, somehow trim that. It's kind of bluff, but I think it's necessary.
And we care about those.
Yeah. It's kind of a big deal.
Okay, so
I think we have a motion there. Does someone want to make a motion?
So you want to go operations, maintenance, health, safety, and general welfare, or emergency situation?
Right.
You want to just add the general welfare language?
Right.
Yeah.
I guess so.
I think health.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
On the phone?
Okay. Can you restate that? Or will you restate what that is?
Yes, have you got it written down, Mark?
Yeah, so at the end of subsection 5A, where it says it's designated water service area based on operations, maintenance, or emergency situations, it would be amended to say based on, or changed, to say based on operations, maintenance, health, safety, general welfare, or emergency situations. It's just adding health, safety, and general welfare.
It's standard.
Okay, I'm good with that.
And did you vote in favor, Ed?
Aye, yep.
Okay, anyone opposed? All right, that was unanimous as well.
Okay, so subsection 6 comes back to this question of how we define waterworks and why it matters in this particular section.
Great question.
Yeah.
Mark?
Yes.
Mark, can I go to B?
Yes.
And 5B?
Yes.
Okay, so we've had the discussion about the, and I don't know which is an appropriate section to add this to, but the notion of tying our water acquisition to the 40-year plan, and so I want to make sure B doesn't go sideways of coming back to the notion. I notice it's not in this draft either, but in previous discussions we know that's an issue, and that water, those water holdings should be consistent with the 40-year plan. So I don't want B to go sideways of that, but also I think we need to address the 40-year plan somewhere in this proposal. Yeah. And as Boyd shared with us, they don't really see these proposals. We just assume cities have them. So I think we need to add that somewhere.
I'm not sure if I understand what your concern with the 40-year plan is, or with water holdings in the 40-year plan.
We're
starting to see, and we have long seen, cities trying to acquire water, even, holy cow, going to other cities and buying farms or buying property so they can acquire the water rights for some future use, and the assumption is that that should be a part of a 40-year plan. We would not ever want to see a city just gobble water far in excess of meeting the needs of its residents and precluding other cities from being able to directly acquire that water. When we discussed the 40-year piece, one of the problems was that's not, what do you do with that? They're not submitted to the state. We don't know if they're maintained, updated, filed, public access. And we should have an understanding of, you know, our cities, they're, have problems with cities owning or controlling land extrajurisdictionally. So the fact that we now have cities buying land in other cities just to have the water, to me, is problematic.
So, okay.
So they, at the very, very least, water acquisition, a city acquiring water, any water, should be tied to its 40-year need for its inhabitants, not tied to a limitless expansion of a regional service area either.
Well, we already have. So I think part of the reason that's not addressed here, first of all, is that's a pretty big thing to bite off compared to the scope that we've been talking about on the other two issues, on the rates and on equitable. But in the existing water code, and I think that it already basically addresses this. I mean, the existing water code, the exemption doesn't just say 40 years. It says that the reasonable future water requirement of the public is the amount of water needed in the next 40 years by the persons within the public water supplier's reasonably anticipated service area based on reasonably anticipated population growth or other water use demand. So I think you're already, I don't think that adding more language here necessarily, I think that the concern you're expressing is already addressed in the water code.
Yeah. Paul? The difficulty I have, Representative, is the 40-year plan really turns in the change application title and statute. It gets into the Title 73.
Water rights.
And other things. Those were battles that we have fought as a water community for a long time, a lot of scars, and I think it would just cause, to be honest, I think it would it could derail the work we're doing right now. And as Mark says, I think we already have a lot of protections in the 40-year plan. If as a separate piece of legislation you want to look at 40-year issues and cities buying properties, et cetera, I think that might be appropriate for another piece of legislation. But my own my own feeling is if we tie it in with this this legislation, it will kill the bill because the water community is right now
okay,
is...
So Mark and Paul, do you feel like this reasonably assumes that other section of code?
Yes, it's...
Go.
Let's do that. That section of code is there, and every water system in the state is very mindful of it. And anytime we have to file a change application, the state engineer then has that opportunity to ask to see our 40-year plans. And as a matter of practicality and operations, you'll start seeing the dovetailing of these service areas and designated service areas, but that will happen as practical in the world of practicality and operations. I don't think we should touch it in legislation.
But I do agree. This doesn't overrule what's in Title 73, and there's no reason to think that somehow a city could say, oh, based on this, I get some pass that I wouldn't otherwise have.
It doesn't add it or take away from it.
And while we're talking about 40-year plans, what you need to keep in mind also is that that provision doesn't just apply to cities. It applies to all public water suppliers. So if there's an issue with that provision, we probably need to address it globally.
Yes.
Not here, which is just about cities.
Okay.
Okay, so number six is back to...
Can I stop just a second? Because I don't know if you're satisfied or not, or if you want to make a motion, Representative Coleman.
No, I think we just keep moving forward. Okay. I think this is good, but I think that's maybe a different conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so subsection 6, this is where the Destination Water Works is really significant, even though it's used in other places in this draft. A municipality may not sell or convey an interest in part or all of its waterworks system except to a public entity as defined in Section 73-1-41. And for those of you who don't have the water code memorized, a public entity as defined in that section means the United States, an agency of the United States, the state of Utah, a state agency, a political subdivision of the state, or an agency of a political subdivision of the state. So this is to address to coordinate with the Constitution. Right now, waterworks can't be sold by a city. They have to be held for the public. And now it's saying the only time you can... It's proposed to strike waterworks from the Constitution, and so you could sell or lease waterworks. But then this is a legislative prohibition that the only person or entity you can sell any part of your waterworks system to
is another
governmental entity, public entity.
So question on that is, are there public water suppliers that don't meet that criteria?
Yes, yeah. The privately owned public water suppliers. And I represent one of them. And I don't
private
think
as a nonprofit or private as
like
a for-profit?
Like Holiday Water Company, Water Pro. That's about it.
Some of water.
There's not many of us.
There's Boulder has one. Boulder Water Company instead of Boulder City, Boulder Town.
But we looked at possibly doing it to the public water supply you could sell. But I think the league would feel more comfortable if it went to another government entity that was subject to the public, input. And realistically, what are we really talking about? You're really talking about probably to a district or another city that you would be cooperating with.
Yes, to accommodate growth. So
yes.
You may have City X that is providing that service through water work because City Y is small, but City Y grows. we want to be able to transfer that water work citywide as citywide grows. You know, that's the concept. We didn't want to open it up too broadly, where you open it up to where private waterworks could, or where public waterworks could become private.
It's a very good change.
Yeah. Scott,
are you hearing this on the phone?
Yeah, most of it.
Okay. This seems to me an important safeguard to go hand in hand with the loosening up of the constitutional prohibition to allow a city to do things with its waterworks.
I don't even see if do we have any restrictions.
Okay. Any other comments?
Yeah, I'm behind this. This sounds great. The question I have is I think the two don't need to be codependent. 1B and 6. And here's why.
Oh, this is the definition.
Yeah, the definition. I don't think we want to die on this hill, but B could be, for purposes of this statute, you could have a culinary water delivery system. Means municipally owned distribution facilities for culinary water, period. And then you could have the waterworks definition, because that culinary water delivery system works for everything else in the statute save 7. Oh, excuse me, 6, sorry. And then you could maintain your waterworks definition for its use in 6.
Why is there a need to have a separate culinary water definition?
Because a retail connection, Paul, does not come off a collection system. It doesn't come off a treatment system, nor does it come off a storage system. And it also doesn't include irrigation water.
I disagree, because our storage tanks provide the water pressure for by retail customers. And if you have treatment plants, it's the same thing. And the reason we use this definition is it's out of Title 59.
Are you providing irrigation water?
We don't.
Okay.
But Magna Water Improvement District does.
Right.
They have secondary water supply.
Right.
And so the definition was pulled from Title 59.
Right, and that's my point, is the definition is unnecessarily broad and includes things that aren't really germane to that portion of the statute, whereas for purposes of subsection 6, waterworks does work.
Well, I guess the question is, what do you think the Constitution applies to today? Does the Constitution apply to all of these things or not? When it says waterworks,
right,
does it include all of this stuff?
Right, and the prohibition that we're trying to lift out of the Constitution certainly applies to waterworks and your Title 6. Whereas what we're trying to handle with respect to enhanced security for outside of city boundary retail connections certainly is derived from a culinary distribution system.
I think also if you use the word just distribution for somebody that operates, that it's a very specific term, and treatment is not part of your distribution. So you're basically, if you define it as distribution, you're basically opening the door for somebody to sell a treatment plant potentially with that word change. If I'm understanding.
No, yeah, all right. This is not a real biggie for me, other than I think the definition of waterworks for purposes of retail customers, the definition immediately above, is not, I think it's too broad. But yes, it is what it is.
My impression, go ahead, of the definition in 1B is that it could be that large. Every city doesn't have a treatment plant.
Right.
Every city doesn't have a pump station.
Or a secondary.
But every city has a distribution system and storage, and the retail customers rely upon those. And many cities have treatment plants or wells. Every city has to have a source of supply unless it relies 100% on another provider.
Right.
So I think we were just trying to... This definition is really just being tied into the constitutional issue. And if someone can define what the Constitution means by waterworks,
right,
that's what we're trying to lift out of the Constitution.
Precisely, the Constitution talks about alienation.
How about adding the words may include a system owned that may include collection treatment?
See, and the reason we did that because the cities wanted to retain the prohibition on selling a sources.
That essentially says it could have all of these, but it doesn't necessarily mean that all of them must.
That's true.
Let me give you guys an example that will help me understand, because I'm not sure I understand. That a number of different cities and water systems will have a reservoir or a tank that's outside the city up at higher elevation, and they'll have a pipeline that will be sometimes very long. Someone who's very remote has 1 acre and wants to put a cabin, or they've been there for a while and they want to now connect to that supply. My understanding was we leave it to the city to define whether that connection is going to be a contract connection, Big Cottonwood, right? A connection that is not part of the retail water system, but yet they're going to allow it under other specific conditions. As we look at these waterworks definitions and the retail customer definition, my understanding is from our past meetings conversation, we want to be able to define that so the people knows they know which category they fit into, but we leave it up to the city to decide if they're being defined within the retail area, or no, you're not part of our retail area because you're different. You're located a different location or unique. But yes, we can under a contract basis provide you with water. We wouldn't want these definitions to now cloud those together and erode that distinction.
Yeah. I think it's not, I like how the statute reads. I do get concerned. I think, and this is the point that Tom was making, maybe I'm...
That it obligates more than...
Yeah, especially when you look at 3A... post on its website or map showing its designated water service area and any other areas outside of the political boundaries where retail customers receive water service from the municipality's waterworks system. Are they receiving retail customers outside of the political boundaries? Are they receiving water from a collection system? That's what I worry about.
Well, let's go back to the league's survey. More than half of them out there have similar water contracts.
Sure.
What we don't want to do is all of a sudden all of those contracts, because they're connected to a waterworks system, are now retail customers, as opposed to someone's going to have to, I think the only...
Do we even need to say...
Define very narrowly, the only like
the waterworks
making a water item.
Just say from the municipality, period?
From the municipality, I think that's...
And maybe that would address the concern.
I think it's a question on the phone.
My notes, I chopped out of that a good chunk of 3A, and with 3A, being fully retained, that's sort of reinvigorates my concern about the waterworks system definition. So.
No, that
is that the only other place we
sure maybe that's the better solution.
Yeah, that would be great.
My suggestion then is on 3A, what you do is you go and you just say receive water service from the municipality. Period. You don't have to say how they get it. And that way it's not tied back to the definition. Because the definition really is there for the constitutional issue.
Right. I think Representative Coleman has a question. Representative Coleman, were you?
No, I'm good.
Oh, okay.
Mark, is there a reason you drafted it that way, that you're thinking here?
Well, actually, I was when I drafted and included the word waterworks system in 3A, I was trying to actually keep this narrow to make it clear that if you wholesale water to somebody and then they sell to somebody else, that's not, you don't have to show that on your map.
I think this would still restrict you just to the retail.
So. Are you just suggesting removing the two the words waterworks system from
just 3A? Say municipality, period.
From the municipality?
Yeah, right there. Just put a period.
Yeah. Someone want to make a motion?
Go ahead, Ed. Wait.
Mark? Yeah, Mark. Just so I understand, you understand our little situation with the city of St. George. So we want to be able to have them be able to sell the treatment plant to the water district. Is that what we're working towards?
Yes, we're working towards that.
Is Sean Guzman there today?
He is not. He's not technically on this committee, although he does come here sometimes, but I don't know where he's at today.
I think Scott just identified an ambiguity and, you know.
Do you understand where I'm coming from on that, Mark?
I do, Ed.
I just thought. And this change wouldn't affect that, I don't think.
I don't think so.
No, I think we're good.
Okay. Unless the water municipality figured out how to provide water without pipes.
So I guess the suggestion, nobody's made a motion yet, though, is in 3A, where we talk about the map or maps showing the designated water service in any areas outside of its political boundaries where retail customers receive water service from the municipality, it would be to end that and put a semicolon there,
right,
and remove what's in the draft that says waterworks system.
That's basically the change.
Is there a motion? Anyone want to make that motion?
Nobody knows who's on the committee anymore.
I'll make that motion.
Dave makes that motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. We'll make that change.
Good catch, Scott. I hadn't even thought about it.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about water rates. Yes?
Just one last question. Why aren't we discussing marking this draft surplus water? We surely want to be included in the health, safety, and general welfare, and now we're going into the water rates section. That's a concern of ours, too.
So the question has been raised, why aren't we dealing more with surplus water? Right. Well, where we really probably provide that for is in this next section. Although it talks about contracts. So we actually talk about contract two places. The first place we talk about it actually was in subsection six. What did I just do with my thing? Yeah, in subsection five. That the city can still enter into supply contracts outside of the city. And then we'll also have a provision in the next section, the end, that talks about providing water outside of the designated water service area.
Okay, so when I asked about the one in number four, it didn't seem like we would be included in the consistent with principles of equal protection.
That is true.
Correct.
That is correct. We had a long discussion last meeting about the difference between contract customers and people who are going to be retail customers in a service area, and I believe we actually voted and directed Mark to draft it this way based on that discussion.
See, by contract, you may have better rights or you may have worse rights, but it's all by contract.
But does that mean that we can't be treated? We've been threatened to have our water turned off, and we've been threatened to have our water rates raised 1,300%, maybe. So where's that equality under equal protection come in for us?
And that comes in when the city, if these provisions pass, if the city decides you're part of their water service area, then you get those protections. If they decide you're not and you're a contract customer, that's a function of the contract that you negotiate with the city.
And
so if you want those provisions, you negotiate for those in your contract.
And there's no third party that we can go to help with those negotiations.
Put your contract.
Part of the discussion, Barbara, is that many of the entities who rely upon contracts like this would have no development if there wasn't the ability without encumbrances for an entity to extend that. So the League of Cities and Towns, reached out and found out that many entities do this because you have five houses developed a mile outside the city, but they're near the water tank. Well, the city doesn't want to take on the obligations that might come with treating them like a retail customer, but yet, if you don't make it flexible enough that they can allow them water, it creates an opportunity. Because the other option for those people is either to drill a well if there's no water available. In your instance, in Big Cottonwood, those entities, I know that your rates were like 10% of the rest of the retail customers, and many of them were saying their rates were going up, but yet, in reality, you're paying much less. And the second part would be that you're not treated like someone in the valley because you're a mile higher and it's a different kind of system. And what we don't want to do is force a city to either say, I'm sorry, we can't do these anymore, you're off, or for those that might have the ability in the future to maybe develop, if they could enter into a surplus contract, to do that. So that was part of that discussion that happened. It's quite a long discussion, but I'm giving you the synoptic version that to go to where you're going, I think, would prevent the ability of cities to facilitate growth outside of city boundaries.
Some of our homes have been up there for a long time.
And that speaks to itself. That's a testament to the fact that they're there and they're running. And maybe if one staff member in a heated moment said something that I've heard repeated several times, what I have heard repeated several other times is the water supply is not going to be cut off or hasn't been.
I hope so.
Right. But that, I don't want to, I know we spent a lot of time last time on that topic. I just want to bring you up to speed since you weren't here.
Okay. So it was a conscious decision to separate those into two classes based on our discussion last week. And there are protections being provided for retail customers that aren't being provided for contract customers, and there still may be more discussion about that, but that was where the decisions were made last meeting in order to get this draft done.
On that note, I feel like 3A is still a little bit ambiguous, so how is water service from the municipality defined? Could we just say that a municipality that provides water service to retail customers outside of its political boundary shall post on its website a map or map showing its designated water service area, period?
No, because we want a map that also shows if you are going beyond that.
Oh,
and but with retail customers, you see.
So where retail customers receive water.
Yeah, that's right. The limitation is retail. We're not asking for a map of all your wholesale contracts. Okay.
What if we added in a municipality system?
Municipality system. Well,
yeah. We just removed that.
Let's think on it.
Well, no, but we got rid of the waterworks system, the defined term.
Or just leave it at municipality, okay. As long as we're clear on
keep thinking about
sell.
That.
Yeah.
Let's keep moving. Yeah.
I think we do want to talk about water rates.
I just don't
want
to make ambiguous.
I just want to get to rates that says they can't charge more in my area.
All right, let's talk about water rates. And again, even after we follow the straight and narrow path that Fred set out for us, it doesn't mean we can't still have discussion
about other things,
about whether we're still like it or not going forward. So okay. We do have to get to a final solution someday, but I think we still can talk about some of that.
It won't be over till the legislature votes.
That's for sure.
Everybody will have their piece into it.
Well, then you have the next session.
Okay, so water rates. So again, there's two definitions here. One is a definition of a large municipal drinking water system, which means the municipally owned and operated drinking water system serving a population of 10,000 or more. And that will specifically come into play later when we talk about an advisory board. And then the other one is retail customer with the same meaning as provided in section 10-7-14. So again, this section used to be really short, or at least currently is really short. If this language gets adopted or something like it, to get a lot longer. So under subsection 2, a municipality shall fix the rates to be paid for the use of water furnished by the municipality. That's what's there currently. So any questions so far about definitions or about existing language?
Let's hurry while the troublemakers know.
We have another subcommittee out there.
Number 3, the setting of municipal water rates is a legislative act, which kind of goes, well, we talked about before ordinances and resolutions, but either way, it's a legislative act. Number 4, within its designated water service area, a municipality shall A, establish by ordinance reasonable rates for the services provided to its retail customers.
Can I ask that you add water before services?
So established by ordinance reasonable rates for the water services. Okay, that might be redundant based on the definition of retail customer.
Okay, I just popped on, sorry.
No, I get what you're saying, but I think we may be okay, I hope. Because the services are going to be based on, I think, the retail customers who are receiving water directly from the city.
There's not a bunch of different services, just the retail
services. Under this section. Okay, B, municipality shall use the same method of providing notice to all retail customers of proposed rate changes, and C, shall allow all retail customers the same opportunity to appear and participate in public meetings addressing water rates. So,
can I just interject?
Please.
Just the same concern that I've expressed before is, notwithstanding an equal protection clause, rate setting really, I don't know how we ever get to a place where we mitigate the concern of disenfranchisement of the rate, the water users. I mean, I think this is a great step. This whole exercise and this whole draft is a big step in that direction. But I think I just want to state for the record again that it's been a decades-long concern that rates are set by a governing entity that some people have no real say. And we're going to try to create some due process for them. We're going to try to create a standard of equal protection. But at the end of the day, it's really not there to the degree a citizen has in affecting who their governors are when it comes to rates and fees and taxes.
That's right.
And I don't have a suggestion. I just want to say it again while we're here.
We recognize that, but I think Mark's made a great effort at trying to provide something that will give people a chance to have more meaningful input and notice.
And that's what I'm saying too, but again, just to reiterate that we will always fall short of the ability of people to exercise their greatest voice at the ballot box.
Yep. And the way to make sure that doesn't happen is make sure you're part of the city.
And this fix not only deals
with... Well, but we're making it really okay to not be a part of the city. We're making it really okay for the cities to expand outside of their city.
Is it too late to dissolve Mill Creek?
Yeah. This Fred, well, sorry, let's go to Richard
deals
first.
With not only the issue of retail customers outside the city boundaries, it fixes... gives more definition to a problem that, well, not a problem, but an unknown issue that's within city boundaries currently, and that is business owners. They are retail customers, but I don't think there's anywhere that says they have equal voice or equal participation, whereas this would benefit them as well as retail customers outside the city boundaries that are within the designated service area.
Well, but there is a world where... that is where it's up to cities to be attractive to businesses,
yeah.
And businesses can and frequently do choose their location based on fees and tax policies and services. But we should never say, ever, that if you don't like it as a citizen resident, you can move. I hope we would never say that.
I've heard that before.
Fred,
just a clarification. When you start talking about the rate-setting authority for retail customers, that includes the commercial ones, the industrial ones, as well as the residential that you're selling water to. Is that correct?
They're all retail customers.
Okay. So retail customers, and we're not just talking about the residential customers.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's that definition.
Yeah.
Yes, so it applies, yeah, the definition of retail customer applies to all customers, whether you're a resident, a person, family, or a business, or an industry, or whatever.
Well,
thank you. Although I don't think I made it up. I think I copied it from somebody else. So, number five. So this is where we're going to talk about recognizing how rates are set for different people in different places, or different customers in different places. A municipality may establish different rates for different classes of retail customers within its designated water service area if such treatment has a reasonable basis. So that's going to be like the rule. The rest of this is going to talk about how we get to a reasonable basis. But the rule is, within the designated water service area, you have to have a reasonable basis. And that, again, is what the Constitution says. It's what the court has said. But we're going to try to fill it out a little bit. So 5A, examples of a reasonable basis for charging different rates include, Romanet 1, differences in the cost of providing service to a particular class. Romanet 2, whether one class bears more risk in relation to system operations or obligations. Romanet 3, investments made by one class to build or maintain the system that are different from another class. Romanet 4. Okay, so, well.
What does that mean?
Investments?
Yeah.
That's. So most of this list comes from Platt versus Town of Torrey.
Is it bonds and other things?
Yeah, it could be bonds.
Snowden is a classic example. They invested in water line from the valley up to the bird, and they put that in so that the water rates they get charged up at Snowbird now are consistent with the delivered rates down the
okay.
valley.
I just wanted to make sure I understood that.
Yeah.
I suggest with 3A, I'm sorry, Mark, I don't know if you wanted to comment as we go or if you wanted to wait. But
it might be good to do it, yeah.
Okay, I was just going to suggest that Romanet 3, investments made by one class to build or maintain the waterworks system or...
the water system.
Or the water system.
But we've
system.
Been talking about system throughout. Can two I, has system it, two.
Can I interject something here before we... get all over parsing this part.
Yeah.
Based on my experience with legislative research, mm-hmm. the section on examples won't be in the bill.
it won't say examples, but it will. But we can include the following, and the way we word it, it will say to a court or to a reader. That is an exhaustive list, or that is an example list. So absolutely, we can include this in drafting.
As an example list.
I'm gonna want direction from you guys whether that list should be exhaustive.
No, it's an example.
Not limited to.
I do want to say, however, Representative, I didn't actually pull the words examples of out of a hat. That does exist in relatively few other state places in state statute.
Oh,
I have found it online because I wouldn't have used it.
Well, don't tell Led Research where they are.
You have, and it does exist, but our new drafting conventions are kind of changing so that when we do go into changing the section of code, we'll kind of update that.
Yeah, well, that's just something we're going to be really sensitive about as cities, about how that wording changes. But I get what you're saying.
I was suggesting we add system or, and then add in or to acquire water sources and supply. Better data from another class. I think that, that's a big pocket. I know investments in the system probably includes all that, but I don't know.
You don't want to be limited just to building a maintenance.
Or to acquire what?
Or to acquire water sources and supply.
Do we have a motion on that?
Well, I want to restate it, if that's okay.
So moved.
So what it would say now, investments made by one class to build or maintain the system or to acquire water sources and supply that are different from another class? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. Pauline moved it.
Is there a second?
Well, I have a thought on this too.
Okay.
sorry.
Question on motion. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Not on the motion, per se, but just on this section. Platt versus Torrey applies a reasonable standard because there wasn't another standard.
Well,
and I wonder if this is a time we might consider the standard. Should it just be reasonable? Because as we've discussed in the past, the only remedy we have, a citizen would have, to challenge this is litigation. And I think litigation should never be the first and only recourse. But it's what it is. And so I think when you reduce remedy, you should increase protection up front. And I wonder if the reasonable should be there. I think I might, and just that I don't have the language for this, but conceptually in my head, is that it should be tied to something a little bit firmer than simply, can a city demonstrate that this is reasonable? Should a city have to demonstrate that no, this is reasonable, but this is tied to something we can generally quantify?
I think Mark is trying to.
If you're
going to
change twice as. If you're going to change, if you've got to carry the water 2,000 feet up a hill and it costs you twice as much to deliver that as someone in the valley, then it's okay to charge twice as much. If you can show that it costs twice as much, you can charge twice as much. But to say maybe you triple it, and maybe that's reasonable, I just wonder if that's the standard we want to stick to. I want to defer this concept to the people in the room who feel vulnerable and see if we're satisfied with the reasonable standard, or should we tie it to a more firm, quantifiable standard.
Well, I think if we want to change it, we're going to have to change the Constitution, because the Constitution uses reasonable rates as its default, and there's not a proposal to change that.
Well, the difficulty, Representative.
Okay, so now you know that we can tighten legislatively where we have a generalized concept in the in the Constitution, we can always firm it up in the code.
No, you have enough votes.
The difficulty.
Because I think this would provide greater protections in statutes, and the code gives a general protection. We can give a specific protection that would comport with that constitutional protection.
Representative, this is Paul.
So I want to defer again. I want to defer to the people in the room, the people on this committee, or the people listening in the room, who are most vulnerable to disparate rates, and see if they feel comfortable with just maintaining the reasonable standard, or if we want to consider a more firm standard and justification.
Can I speak for a sec? I live in Mill Creek, so I pay the disparate rate. And yes, I think the water rates are too high, but they're still less than what I charge when I build my own system. So I can't complain too much. But the reality is, I see this really as a first step process, because if we want to start micromanaging the setting of rates, it's a heavy lift. And then who is going to be the person that looks at it? The only way we could really be satisfied is to give rate-making power to an entity other than the city council itself, and we're not there yet. I think what we have is the Torrey case and the others, the Constitution says a reasonable standard. And the language I look at is on subsection 5B, which basically says in statute that you cannot make it solely based on the fact that you live outside the municipal boundaries. And that means the city is going to have to actually justify this disparate rate system. And I know that Salt Lake tries to do that, and they look at that issue. And if they don't do it well, then we will be back. We'll have to change something. But right now, I personally feel like this is actually a pretty good first step. It makes the city at least look at the issues. I remember when we were looking at the impact fee statutes, everybody came in and said the cities had to put in, do impact fee studies, you know, the developers, and the consequence was everyone paid higher impact fees. So I'm hesitant to make cities do a fee study because I'm afraid my fees will in fact go up at that point in time.
Well, actually, Paul, the city has done a fee study and calculated your cost of service.
And it's going down.
Your individual cost of service, by the way.
Your individual. So you are at a class of your own.
I didn't hear that. That's not recorded.
But the reality is, I guess I'm operating in good faith here. I believe that with the statute and this, and I worked on this legislation with the drafting group, and I'm operating on the assumption that the cities will act in good faith here, and if they don't, I'll be the first one to come back and, you know, see if we need to tighten the statute up.
So I think another way I might put it is that a reasonable standard, the burden is on the
one challenger
to prove it's unreasonable, but if we tied it to, you know, it has to be a disparate rate, has to be commensurate with or proportionate to the actual cost of distributing that water to that differential rate user, then the burden is on the city in applying a differential rate. And to me, I think that's usually where things should be. Usually public policy, well, always public policy should favor the citizen, and the burdens of proof and taxation and fees should be on the agency. And so that's why I think I would like to at least consider something different. I don't want to hold this up, but I think this is still key, because that's where we're hearing the disenfranchisement lies, is with not much ability to affect at the ballot box. So how can we shift burdens to the agency? And so the idea of reasonable standard makes a citizen prove that versus a harder standard that would make the city have the burden of proof. That, to me, is good government, good public policy, but I would still defer to the people who feel vulnerable to disparate rates.
Yeah.
And so if there's anybody else, in addition to Paul.
Anyone else affected?
Fred?
When you look at the 5A in whole, it says reasonable rates, which is the tie to the Constitution, and then you add five separate standards that define reasonable. The first one is it has to be related to the cost of providing the service. That's what Representative Coleman's talked about. The second one deals with a greater risk in the operation. The third one is investments that may have been made to go up to it. The fourth one are the needs or the condition of one class that are distinguished from another and based on really the facts of that one. And five, the differential based on cost service standards or industry rate setting methods. And so at that point you tied reasonable about six or seven different ways plus the standards that are out there.
And then you get the belt suspenders approach with B. which is what I think the whole thing's really driving at. It says a reasonable basis for charging a different rate does not include an adjustment based solely on the fact that a particular class is located either inside or outside of the municipality's corporate boundary without further justification.
That's basically the point.
That is.
Well, in two through four can be more subjective than the other two items. But I think you can quantify the other two, and the burden to prove the other two, if it was on the city to prove it or defend it in a court of law, I think those are some objective standards. You get to the other two that are subjective, and then placed at a reasonable standard, and that then is incumbent upon the citizen to prove that it's not reasonable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem.
So I would say that Platt didn't start from nowhere, or at least it wasn't done in isolation of other areas. And I think that we've referred before to the American Water Works Association manual that is available, you know, for anybody to look at for how different water rate setting policies happen. And really all of these are included in that manual as ways of applying rate setting standards. They're all in that book that's sold and distributed on a nationwide basis.
And I understand the representative's concern.
Sure.
And because obviously, right now the municipality, if I want to challenge the rate, the burden's on me to challenge the rate. I'm hesitant to. Those burdens of proof are placed there for a reason. It's because you have the city council is acting as a legislative body when they adopt these things. Maybe we should think about it though. I guess I wasn't worried as much because I'm focused on more subsection 6, and that where we actually have input in what the rate should be on the advisory board. Because I'm with you, I would prefer to deal with it before in the rate setting process as opposed to challenging it after the fact. And so to the extent we are giving residents outside the municipal boundary more power or influence in the setting of the rates, I feel better about that. But I have to admit, I am concerned with putting too detail of a standard in the legislation, because California has some of that language, and all their rates end up in court. And the last thing any water provider wants is to always have their rates being fought about in the courts, because then you can't charge them and you can't move forward to improve your system. So I am prejudiced in that regard, because I do manage a water system and I have my own rates.
I want to express a little bit of a concern here too, and I have to tell you from my perspective, my support of this section is hung on one word, and it's up in 5A where it says a city may, the word may, and I think it's important to realize that we're venturing into an area that I feel like the league and probably cities just in general are going to be very hesitant to have the state dictate how they set rates, and for a variety of reasons. And I'll just give one that I think we're kind of forgetting in the larger context. If you go back in the history of water systems and remember, why does a city put a water system together in the first place? It's because it's less expensive in general for a group of people. It's a community effort to get water. And we're forgetting the fact that it's a community effort when we start to distinguish, you know, here's a piece of infrastructure, an investment that's going to cost a part of the city more money. And so we're kind of creaking a door open, I'm afraid, that, you know, does it get into the area of, hey, when a city drills a well, I can tell you, hydraulically modeling, I can tell you exactly where that water is going to go. So do we turn around and start charging a certain section of the city higher rates because we've invested for a well in a certain area? I think that's kind of forgetting the community effort in the water system in the first place.
But there are some cities that do that.
Yeah. There are. And I've actually participated. I have to tell you, I've been part of Draper. I work for Draper City. I know that Draper charges a much higher rate up the mountain. I know that South Jordan has three distinct rates because of water zones. And again, this is a little bit of an area that I think the state is, and cities are in general are kind of forgetting a specific idea behind the water system in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to say this, and I had this conversation yesterday, that under this Section 5, my biggest issue was the lack of definition of a class. Anytime you use the word class, we run the risk of some very ugly things happening. What is the definition of class in this section? And we don't have one. Because that therein, for me, lies a big problem. But I believe that, like Paul, 5B is really at the heart of what's the most important. That you will not be charging rates according to inside outside, that there has to be something else that defines those rates, but the term class has me severely.
Why'd you choose class for?
I chose class because of equal protection.
And I don't think we're ignoring the fact that this represents an investment of a city. What we're doing is starting with recognizing this is an investment of a city in providing a vital resource to its inhabitants. But what happens when they go beyond that and now want to provide water to other people, which can and does prevent other municipalities from acquiring that water to provide to their own people? In those situations, we have vulnerabilities. How do we mitigate these vulnerabilities? And that the burdens should be on the city and not the citizen to prove a reasonable standard, whatever whatever standard we apply. It should be one in which the government defends its position, not the citizen as much.
But that's why you have to set a very good advisory board in place with the good and right conditions to actively participate in that process.
And I think I have to add one other statement. I think Mark has done a really quite a good job in putting a pretty significant burden on the cities here. And I have to tell you also that Salt Lake, I think, has done a pretty tremendous job. I don't know of a lot of other cities. In fact, I'm not sure I know of any other city in the state that has gone to the extent that Salt Lake has in trying to get involved in or outside residents involved in their rates setting. So this is a burden that may get shifted to other cities that are, you know, have not done this in the past.
And there's a lot of cities that don't have differential rates.
There are quite a few, though, that do have.
Because you have to, you also have to think about the fairness for the inhabitants of the city who have put the risk in bonding for the infrastructure that's serving people outside the city, who own the system, who take on the depreciation, that they're investors in the system. They're paying, in our case, they're paying a property tax that other residents or other people on the system.
Okay, so that's already there. That was already discussed. That's in that section.
Yeah. Equal the transparency and the efforts in terms of creating an equitable and fair process in rate setting goes both ways. We have to be fair to the inhabitants of the city. We have to be fair to the people that are outside the city. So Dave's right. This already begins.
This is a city's choice. This represents a city's choice to go outside of its boundary. Mm-hmm. In some cases, acquiring, you know, when one entity acquires water, that's off the table for another entity to be able to acquire that. So where cities may acquire additional water and then say they want to expand their service area to people outside, we've got to provide protections, notwithstanding that the citizens are on the hook for different risks and liabilities. It's, you've got users that are fully dependent on a source that they have no control of the ballot box. And so we've got to mitigate that disenfranchisement, and I think we put the burden on cities, not citizens, because honestly, that's where administrative law is and should always be. And that the citizens enjoy protection. So I think this goes a great way to try to mitigate those things. I just want to state that I don't know that we can get all the way there, and this may be as good as we can get it, but let's just have an understanding we can't mitigate that risk completely. Even if we put an advisory board together, I don't really know what that does, because if it doesn't have quasi-judicial authority, that becomes part of an adjudicative process, then what do you have? What do you really have? And, what are the citizens afforded other than just some opinion of some appointed people, which, again, I think it's still a good step. So please don't misunderstand me. I think it's a good step in the right direction. I don't know that we can... I don't know how we entirely mitigate the vulnerability.
Okay.
But so when a city says, we're big enough and we're cool enough and we know how to do this well enough that we want to do it for lots of other people, then the burden should be on them to demonstrate that they do it equally, fairly, and limiting risk to the people they want to scoop into the service area.
All right. I have a comment in the back that's been holding for a long time here. Okay.
Representative Coleman, I know you're trying to be fair here, but in practical terms, if you make this too onerous on the cities and put too much of a burden on the city, the easier solution for them is to say, we're not going to do this anymore. You're looking at big systems here, but I come from a rural area, and I'm aware of a couple of towns, and they didn't want to really hook people up. People came to them and begged them to get some water connections because it was so much cheaper for them to get.
And that's what happened in Salt Lake City.
But if they go through this whole process and the burden's going to be on the city, they're going to say, no more of that outside our city. It's not worth doing. And so that's a balance you've got to strike.
Are you suggesting that some cities may be averse to being fair?
No, I'm not saying that. I think they have bent over backwards to the people. But when you start trying to put all the burden on the city, it becomes easier to say, we're not even going to deal with this. We won't take any more connections. We'll stay within the city boundaries. And out in the rural areas, a lot of times they have the best water sources, and individuals outside can go buy them and drill their own wells and maintain their own system, but it gets really expensive. I'm outside of a city, and I would love to have rates close to the city rates, because every time I have to pull my well to make repairs, my cost far exceeds what the people in the city are paying. We just need to be careful on this. I think what Mark has drafted here is a really good attempt to do what we can do without making it too burdensome on the cities.
Okay. We're starting to lose
the
members of the committee, so we want to get through this.
Can we vote on the acquire water shares, sources, and supply under 5A3?
Yeah.
I think we had a motion.
We had a pending motion beforehand. If you would like to make a motion of some type, Representative Coleman, we'll come back to that in just a second. Otherwise, we'll move on. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yes, please.
Okay. All right. You have it written down, Mark, so can you
restate? So, again, the motion is investments made by one class to build or maintain the system or to acquire water sources and supply that are different from other class.
So it's under 5A3.
Three.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Good, Lord. How are you?
Second.
We have a motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Representative Coleman?
Is the motion to adopt this section?
Well, it's to modify that one part of it.
5A3.
Okay. Okay.
Are you in favor of the motion?
Yes. Aye.
Those opposed? I see nay. Richard's being quiet here.
Yeah, nay. And the reason I vote against is the concept that David Decker raised. If it's a community effort, there's definitely a cost of service difference in distribution systems to classes of residents, but sources of supply seems to me they belong more with the community effort and not dividing some supplies strictly to a class. So that's why I voted nay.
Okay. The motion still passes, so we'll stick it in and move on. All right?
Does Coleman want to make a different motion?
Just a question for Mark on drafting. If the example language creates a problem for legislative research and general counsel, you could eliminate examples and just start the sentence with reasonable basis for charging different rates may include, and then list the number.
And I think they'll do that for you.
Well, why don't we do it first?
They don't change it.
So we amend our motion.
And you could throw in including but not limited to, but that's.
They won't do that either.
No, not limited to anymore. That's contract language.
Does someone want to make a motion about that? Or do we?
So moved.
So there's been a motion made to strike the word examples
of.
A.
Well, I think A will stay in there.
Or you could just start. You can do it any way you want. I was just trying to get examples out and then say reasonable basis for charging difference you may include, and then you have your list.
So are we talking about inserting may include?
Yes. Well, yeah. David Decker liked the word may, and yes. So I thought if he liked it in one place, he might like it in another, and maybe two mays makes a shout.
You better try.
So
you know what satisfies your draft? I think what satisfies your draft concern is just to remove or at the end of or.
No, I don't think that will satisfy. Are you said? Well, what would you put there, Representative?
I just put and. Because when you put this, and that are reasons, but if you put the or, then it means it has to be one of those. But if you put the and, I think that, I mean, my experience with drafting examples is how they word it. And, you know, this will go to the drafting attorneys anyway, if we just tell them what we want here. We want them to be examples, but they're not exhaustive examples, right?
They're not.
Are we saying we don't want these to be exhaustive examples? I can just direct the drafting attorney that they can see examples, but not exhaustive.
Sure.
Standards.
Well, that was basically what my motion was. But if you throw in the and at the bottom, that means you have to hit all five.
Well, that's the question. Is do
and
you have to?
The question is.
Well. Yeah.
But I think if it's a reasonable basis may include, I think each one of those is a separate basis. So
yeah, I think.
So maybe and is okay.
And would be fine. I mean,
yeah,
you
I
use
think
all,
and is all right.
In rate setting, these are all
used. Yeah, this is going to be this is going to be completely up to the drafting attorney to make sure the convention includes what we want. So I'll just direct her to say we want these to be examples, but not exhaust.
Where is it?
Not an exhaustive. Let's formulate a motion here that makes sense. We've kind of gone in circles going other places. So can we restate what the motion is?
Okay, I have one more. Okay. I would have a motion,
Okay.
I withdrew mine. So.
What's your motion, Representative Coleman?
My motion is that we direct the drafting attorney to make sure that this list represents examples, but not an exhaustive list of standards.
That's fine.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Ed, are you still there?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. That's... So just put a note in there, I guess.
Put a note. All right. Okay, can we move on to the advisory board?
Can I ask for one wording change, potentially? Well, one, I think, support a different rate in Romanet 4 is redundant. Same with a differential based on... I know that the Ledge Council will clean all that up. But the one thing that I would like to see added potentially in 5 would be other varying costs of service standard and then insert conservation.
So
5 would read other varying costs of service, comma, standards, comma, conservation, comma, or industry accepted rate setting methods.
Because we set rates on for conservation.
I think conservation is covered under Romanet 4.
Needs or conditions.
Needs or conditions that are distinguishable from needs or conditions of another class based on economic, public policy, or other identifiable elements.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, let's move on.
Okay.
We on to 6?
Okay. So this is the advisory board section under subsection 6. And this is where the definition of large municipal drinking water system comes into play. So if more than 10% of the total retail water connections within a large municipal drinking water system's designated water service area are located outside of the municipality's corporate boundary, the municipality shall. So let's be clear about who we're talking about here. Large drinking water system, municipal drinking water system, is a population of 10,000 or more, and at least 10% of those connections, not individuals, but connections, are outside of the city. In that case, they will, if they meet that standard, they will have to create an advisory board.
And post on the website.
Yeah, okay, so first of all, they post on the website rates assessed to retail customers within the designated water service area, so that has to be on their website. There's not going to be a problem here with that being on the website because it's only going to be a big city. It's not going to be a smaller group. It's also why I wanted to not require a little town. Let's say you have 100 people in your town or 100 connections and you got 10 outside the city. I'm not sure that the town could absorb the rest of this either. So post on your website your rates. B, establish an advisory board to make recommendations to the municipal legislative body for water rates, capital projects, and other water service standards. Now the rest of this is going to say how that committee is formed or how it's organized under subsection C. Go ahead.
So I have a question on the OBLA or state. How many individual users could be part of a single connection?
Well, a connection is usually going to be
What's
meter.
What's the upper limit there?
I don't know.
It's usually going to be what?
I don't know.
Okay, anybody in the room?
Occasionally.
What is the potential number of end users that could be served by a single connection?
And I don't think it's defined. That's part of what Marie Owens has been frustrated about, is because you have situations where people have master meters and there's lots of customers behind it.
or depends on who's coming to dinner.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of apartments being built in Salt Lake right now, and I suspect they all have one meter.
No, they're not on master meters.
They're individual meters? Okay.
We avoid master meters as much as possible. They're okay. In the butt.
But I know a lot of apartment buildings have a single meter, so you can have huge developments on one meter.
But that's one of the reasons the same as Laura's. We have lots of apartments, lots of HOAs, but it's rare that there's a master meter. Occasionally there's a master meter for a HOA. But for apartments, they're usually metered individually.
It's a very rare exception, and it is not the rule in our community. So.
So is there anybody give me an upper limit number of people served by a single connection that they're aware of?
I think we could probably do like an average. But on average, there's, you know, a single family home. I think we assume 4 people per household. Some are higher, some are lower, but that's, and then, you know,
okay, so
can serve a business. It can serve.
This,
yeah. Go ahead.
This section right here is intended to provide protection, a little bit of due process, for an individual water user who is affected by a rate. Why would we not trigger this by the number of individual users rather than a connection, which is ambiguous at best, undefined at worst? Why would we not trigger this review process, which is supposedly to protect the user? Why would we not then define it according to the number of users?
Well, because you don't know the number of users the same way you know the number of connections, right? With your connections, you can do a GIS map, and you'll know how many connections you've got, and you'll know if they're inside or outside the city boundaries.
And it's going to correlate to your maps, your designated service areas.
Connections are not a person seeking due process.
They represent a person.
I don't know that this is an appropriate metric. It is an appropriate identification that triggers review process. It should be the number.
The part of the problem, representative.
Not a connection. A connection is an inanimate part of a system that will never speak because it has no voice. Is not going to be seeking an appeal. The user is. A citizen is.
Yep. Can I interject here for a moment? A connection goes to a property. Whether the property is a business, apartment complex, in case of an apartment complex, yes, there will be multiple users of the water, but the building is owned by a company. And the only thing that divides out why there's not a master meter nowadays to these massive apartment complex, it goes to a health issue, because if you have a pipeline more than 500 feet, you can't maintain the health, safety, and welfare standards required. So now they're going the connection to directly to the building. So let's say you have 12 buildings in an apartment complex, but that's still one owner that owns that. It's a business. So you cannot just individual renters then say they have a say. It's the owner of the business that has the final say and owns the connection.
Okay, but you're saying apartments, I mean, those are individual residents.
But they don't own it.
But they pay the rate.
But can I mention...
So,
representative, let me just mention one thing. So... The requirement to create the board is based on number of connections. But when we get to subsection C, we talk about who these people are supposed to represent. And it says it will include on the advisory board representatives of retail customers. And I think that gets back to what you're talking about. within the designated water service area whose connections are located outside the municipal boundary. So whether we have to create the board is based on the number of connections, but when we talk about representation, we're talking about representing customers.
Well, isn't it also true if you're concerned?
Okay, but if I live in an area that has less connections, then this appeal process may not benefit me. I may not have the due process we're looking for. And theoretically, if I'm an apartment user, I have less protection than a single family home.
No, I don't think so. Rusty has.
I may share a single connection with 200 other people. So the trigger is different.
This is all just an attempt to decide who's a large water service provider. If 10,000 is not the right number, then is it 5,000, is it 2,000, is it 1,000? The goal is not to make all the little water companies do this because it's too burdensome. So if connection is maybe a safe way to calculate something, but it's not attempting to disenfranchise anybody, it's just drawing a line, and there's a different argument where that line should be. It could be 5 connections.
And the bottom line is the advisory committee is made up of retail customers. They're there to be, and that's where you get to the people. You know, it's the people you put on the advisory committee.
Right. And it's geared towards classes of customers. The segments that
okay.
are... Yeah. Okay.
So it matters who you put on the advisory, but if you're not entitled to the advisory in the first place because you don't meet the that threshold, then it's
moot. Well, then it's... show up the city council meeting. There are other options.
Right.
Views.
So Emily Lewis is making the point, and just remember, so subsection 4 applies to everybody. So everybody gets to show up, everybody gets noticed the same, regardless of how big you are. It's just that this extra step of the advisory board only kicks in if you're in a large system with you know, a certain percent that's outside of the city.
Right. And if 10,000 is too big...
Yeah,
and make it 5,000. I don't care.
I mean,
small cities do.
We've had the discussion. We understand the reason that they've used connections, and I think it's mostly it's a number that water providers have a handle on because they bill connections every month. And so, if you're talking about people versus connections, they don't really have that number every month.
The difference is you have water connections on a daily basis because you know who's on and who's off.
Not.
Yeah.
If you're talking about population, you have a census every 10 years that you get 2 years after it was taken.
Yeah.
Well, and you don't necessarily provide service to the entire census tract.
No.
And so it's a practicality issue. I mean, if you want to make a motion to change it, we can take a vote on that. I think we've had a robust discussion about it, but do you want to make a motion?
Can you help me understand why we couldn't just change that to if more than 10% of the total retail water users?
It's fine.
Do you want to make that motion?
It's hard to get that number.
Well, I want to know what the objection might be to that.
I have an answer. There's no way to know the number of persons. It would be an estimated number.
Yeah.
It's always a census-based estimate. You can't know how many people are in every...
We're dealing here as water managers. We live and die by our water connections. We can tell you on a day-to-day basis how many connections we have in any one place. At least my assistant can tell me how many I have.
But they can't tell you within 100 people how many people are served.
It would only be an estimate. I mean,
why don't we have an understanding of our water use to that degree?
Just because it takes a lot bigger effort because people are a lot more transient than you think they are.
And the reality is...
Well, and I guess I don't mean...
The percentages are artificial.
I guess I don't mean an individual person as much as a home, a business. Why don't we go that far down in our accounting of where we distribute water?
Well, a customer... A customer is a home or a business. I mean, and a connection is service to a home or a business. That's what Paulina was saying.
Yeah. It's
so clearly somebody's paying bills.
So do you just want to say the total instead of connections, do you just want to say total retail water customers, since we've defined a retail customer?
Yeah, why wouldn't that work?
I think we could say total retail water customers instead of connections.
Okay.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
Okay.
We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Are you still there, Ed?
Yes.
Are you in favor?
Aye. Yeah.
Representative Coleman, I think I walked on top of you. Did you say?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Is there anyone opposed? Okay.
And I am taking that motion to also apply to the word connections in other sections in subsection C to say customers instead of connections. So we're going to assume that. So then the advisory board will have representatives of retail customers located outside the municipal boundary as follows. C, Romanet 1, if more than 10% but less than 30% of the total retail water customers are outside of the municipality boundary, then a minimum of 20% of the advisory board members shall represent such customers. Or 2, if 30% or more of the total retail water customers, it's going to have to say retail customers, are outside of the municipal boundary, then a minimum of 40% of the advisory board members shall represent such customers. So do you understand does everybody understand what's going on here? That the percentage of representation of those outside of city customers grows as the number of outside of city customers grow.
Does this assume, I mean, we call it an advisory board. We call it an advisory board. Do they have quasi-judicial functions, or is this simply a committee work?
They're like any other city board. They're like the planning commission. They're like any other...
So here's our challenge. If this is going to be like a planning commission, a planning commission has quasi-judicial functions, and they're recommending actions to a parent board are fairly binding's not the word, but that is a quasi-judicial function. It's an adjudication. If we do this, then do we have, if we assume there is going to be an adjudicative function there on a quasi-judicial...
Let me just stop. There's no expectation that this is in any way quasi-judicial. This is an administrative body that's making administrative recommendations to a legislative body, and the legislative body makes the final action after having taken into account that administrative body's recommendation.
So what you just said describes a planning commission, but a planning commission does have quasi-judicial functions.
It depends on what...
Do we have ripper clause problem?
No. Well, yes and no. I'm sorry. A planning commission has the authority that's delegated to it or directed to it by the city council. Sometimes that involves quasi-judicial actions, but not always. It depends on what the planning commission is reviewing.
Yeah, I have a...
Now, if this is... And we are considering this board to provide due process and an appeal process, in essence, of a rate.
Not an appeal, so a recommendation.
I have a solution to this discussion. Planning commissions are governed and defined in statute. Advisory boards are defined and recognized by ordinance by individual municipalities. example, Salt Lake County has about 140 some odd advisory boards. They are not defined in statute, they are defined in ordinance. So there's a big difference between what statutorily a planning commission is part of the Planning and Zoning Enabling Act. So not the same.
Well, except this board is required by statute to be created. I mean, that's
correct. So it would actually have more substance and more authority.
By definition, it's an advisory board.
It would have more standing than an ordinance created advisory board. So you really have something good here.
All right.
Boyd?
Yes.
It's 3:30, and this might be its own topic.
We're getting punch drunk here.
Yeah.
Does anybody have? Let me go to this. Does anyone have a motion to do anything with this at this point?
I do.
Well, I think that this is necessary conversation, but we can be 20 more minutes on it.
Yeah. Because I think it is time. We've all but lost our quorum here, so.
I think it's important that there's been a lot of changes voted on here today. I would like to see a second draft with all of the new language in it. And we also, I want to make sure that Jeff Silvestrini, Dan Peterson, no, it's not Dan Peterson, Mike Peterson, and the mayor of Holiday all get brought in the loop on this, because the advisory board portion, I would like to see them have a review of this.
What individuals were choosing to be brought into the loop?
They're the
same. Send one out to every city in the state.
Understand, in this county, the retail customers that have brought this to the table and to the forefront are the people living in those cities.
But it's affecting every city.
This will go to the league conference.
Take it to whomever you want.
I mean, I think we've gotten to the end, and I think, Paulina, if you want to take it to those people, I think that's great. Let's get their input.
But please get us a cleaned-up copy, because this is an interesting mess.
And if there's no other motions on changes to this, we can call that work good. Mark, do you want to give us an idea of when you can have revisions?
I'll have it before the end of the week.
Okay. He'll send it to me. I'll put it on the website and mail it out the end of the week. I'd like to get another meeting date if we can.
When is the task force meeting again?
It is...
Not until the end of September.
Yeah, the end of September.
So we need to meet before then.
Would it be good to try to meet before the league meets?
Sure.
When is the league?
Honestly, I don't expect the league to talk about this particular.
The league meeting is the 12th or the 14th.
Yeah,
14th is the business meeting, Paul, where the resolutions. Anytime before the 14th.
What does.
We put forward resolutions before that, Paul, so let's say the 11th.
Yeah.
What does the 11th look like?
That would be fine in the afternoon, the morning.
Let me double check. The resolutions.
I mean, I'm amazed, actually. We've got quite a ways, guys.
Oh, is that right? So that's not a good day for you.
The 10th?
Is
better.
The 10th?
Well, you know what? So just don't plan that one around me. That whole week's going to be crazy.
You've got to be part of it.
Well, we kind of like you to be part of it.
The 7th, Friday?
Friday the 7th, is that better? Representative?
It'd have to be afternoon. Pauline has a meeting in the morning.
How about...
Even Monday, I could probably do Monday.
Monday the 10th?
Is the 10th better? Or worse than Friday for anyone?
It's probably the same for me, so you guys choose between
the
them.
10th?
Monday's better for me.
In the morning? It'd be tough.
The 10th is harder for you?
The 10th is harder, but... it's not as bad as Friday afternoon.
What time Monday works for you, Richard?
7 to 9 a.m. or noon to 2.
How about noon to 2 on the 10th?
That would be fine.
Does that work for you, Mark?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. How about you, Ed? Is that possibility for you?
Probably September the 10th?
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
What day is that again? Is that the meeting?
It's a Monday.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. Let's plan that. Thank you very much for your patience today.
I'll be out here.
It'll be here again. I'm not sure if it'll be this room, but it'll be here. There was another handout there that wasn't on the agenda. If you happen to hear my report to the committee last week, you probably heard a representative questioning the idea that we're not trying to quantify what's going on outside the municipal boundaries. So I've drafted a proposal about how we might address that.
So that's my work.
I did it this morning just to have something. I don't know if there are other ideas. I asked all the committee to think about it. But you're welcome to think about that. I'll put that on the website as well. And I'd like to talk about that next meeting, too, if there's interest in doing that. All right? Thank you.
That's what that is.
Yeah, it's that resolution. Thank you.
Can you justify
now
topic down the street?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.